everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 7, Episode 11, Adventures in Babysitting, written by Adam Glass and directed by Jeannot Swark. This is the second of five episodes of Supernatural. His first was The Haunted Kidney back in Season 6. Bobby is gone, and neither Sam nor Dean is really handling it well, each in their own special ways. Sam is doing his damnedest to continue engaging with reality, and not really allowing himself space to grieve, because that would come with a side order of making himself more vulnerable to the Lucifer torment. Dean, though, can't get past Bobby's death. He's obsessed with the numbers that Bobby fought to give them. Sam does what he can to help a little girl trying to reach Bobby for help, feeling that's a good way to honor Bobby and possibly take on a normal-ish hunt, because normal is good. Dean runs off to Frank to demand answers about those numbers, because that's how he thinks he can best honor Bobby, and actually gets probably the first decent rest he's had in a month. Just like Bobby's numbers weren't quite complete, since he didn't manage to get all the digits written down for them, Sam's working off incomplete information too, and it nearly gets him killed. It takes both of them in the end, working together. Plus, we get a new monster in the Vitala, and what should have been the groundwork a season later, when they find the bunker, of establishing a more cohesive hunter information network, you know? Still kind of grumpy that they never did much with the idea, other than giving it occasional lip service and making it seem like it would be a good idea. I mean, yeah, they were always a little busy putting out potentially world-ending fires, but still, they had a ton of information that could have saved a lot of hunters a lot of agony over the years, and just never got better at sharing it. This episode does give us a little bit of everything, though. A progression of Sam and Dean's emotional states in the wake of Bobby's death, a bit more info about the big myth arc of the season, and Frank being Frank. I love that guy. Well, the advice he has for Dean is agonizing, but it does keep Dean on his feet for another week, when there wasn't really anything else to keep him from imploding. So it's something anyway. But we'll get to that by the final scene of this episode. Season 7 really is just a whole year of flogging Dean raw. Anyway, if you have the DVDs, there's a couple of cut scenes to enjoy, but if not, the transcripts of those scenes are on the Super Wiki page that I linked in the episode post, right down near the bottom of the page. Real brief, they involve Sam looking through Bobby's trunk and finding some nostalgic items, pictures of him and Dean and stuff. Next is Dean and Chrissy finding Sam's motel room via an example of Sam and Dean's code of shortcuts. This is the one I'm most sad was cut, because it plays on their formula of how to find each other if they're separated that was first established way back in 2-7, The Usual Suspects, and gets mentioned again in 4-1 when Dean and Bobby are trying to find Sam again by going to the X motel in the phone book and checking under a specific alias and then choosing a specific room. At least this proves they do switch up their go-to plan a little bit, not going to the first hotel in the phone book, but the third now, because I'm always fascinated by their interpersonal shorthand like this. The last scene is Sam and Dean discussing whether they think Lee and Chrissy will be able to really leave hunting behind, but we do get to address that a little bit in episode. And because this is the first episode after the winter hiatus, we don't have a then segment. We have a The Road So Far segment to REO Speedwagon, which I'm sure Dean was thrilled about. You know, they sing it from the hair. At least it's not Can't Fight This Feeling this time around, so, hey. Improvement, maybe? I don't know. We open with Sam and Dean shooting some things, and then Cass struggling with the Leviathans inside of him, before exploding himself in a lake. We even get one little shot of Dean looking down at Cass's coat floating in that lake. then a montage of a few of the grim hunts they've been on in tense situations all season, including with Bobby, and then Dean morphing into Lucifer and the reminder of Sam's hallucinations. And Lucifer telling Sam, "Your world is whatever I want it to be, do you understand?" And Sam shooting his gun at nothing, trying to kill Lucifer, but it's a hallucination, you can't kill those with guns. But he almost shot Dean, and Dean convinces Sam that this is real, that he is not in the cage, and he uses the pain of Sam's wound on his hand to register that with him. Sam pushes down on that wound so hard that he bleeds through his bandages. And that's what he's been doing the rest of the season to this point to keep the hallucinations at bay. We're then reintroduced to Frank Devereaux, the kind of lunatic guy that Bobby sent them to for help. The brief reminder of Dean killing Amy. And then the Leviathan dude saying, "You can't really kill any of us. We watched Edgar get crushed by a car and then just put himself back together." We then get a gross montage of rancid Leviathan mouths opening, while Bobby voiceovers about how they're smarter than you and you don't have any idea how to even go about beginning to think you could kill one. And then we get video of Dean beheading some. And then we were reminded that Crowley exists and that he's been keeping his demons away from Sam and Dean all season, because he knew that they were too busy trying to fight the Leviathans, and Crowley did not want any demons getting in their way. Crowley wants the Leviathans gone almost as much as Sam and Dean do. We're reminded of Dick Roman's existence through a flashback to Crowley's meeting with him, where Dick was extremely dismissive of Crowley. We then cut to Bobby in Dick Roman's office, who has apparently figured out what the Leviathans are up to, tries to steal their plans, drops them in his escape attempt, and then gets shot in the head before he can share any of that information with Sam and Dean. Dean has got that guy from the organ donation team at the hospital cornered, telling him that Bobby's going to be fine because he's always fine, and he's very angry about this, that Bobby is not fine already. Fix him. While Sam is sitting in the waiting room, desperately squeezing the crap out of his hand to banish Lucifer from tormenting him over all of this, Sam is really struggling with reality. And even though that's not a focus of any of the episodes we've seen, it's still the undercurrent of Sam's whole season. And to highlight that point, we cut back to the first episode of the season where Sam's in the ambulance and Lucifer is sitting over him telling him he's not going anywhere. Then Bobby briefly wakes up long enough to share some numbers with Sam and Dean, calls them idiots, and then dies. And that brings us to now. We open on a man sitting in a truck stop diner. Waitress refills his coffee and mentions that he's been in there a couple nights in a row now. He makes some comment about how he likes the ambiance, but he's clearly watching a woman outside pick up a trucker and walk off with him. As soon as she does, the man at the table stands up, throws some money on the table like he's gonna follow them. When he reaches in his pocket, we can see he's got a knife of some sort on his belt. The waitress tells him thanks and keep safe out there. So immediately you know this guy's not gonna be safe, right? The man follows the couple through a maze of parked trucks, stealthily pursuing them, drawing his knife. But they're not where he thought they would be. They seem to have disappeared. Funny enough, underneath the red glow of the truck stop sign, one of the trucks parked there just says, "National Moving Experts, Relocation Experts." And it's like, yeah, somebody relocated the people you were hunting for there. But while the man is standing there baffled, the waitress comes up behind him and is like, "Hey there, are you lost?" And we see from the man's point of view that everything is just a little bit blurry, like he's been drugged. She laughs as he tries to excuse himself, but he's really wobbly on his feet. She says that she slipped something into his coffee while he was busy watching the skirt, the woman picking up that other man. And then she tells him, "You do know we're venomous, right?" And then she flashes her monstrous eyes at him. and comments that she didn't really dose him hard enough if he's still standing. But she tells him there's more where that came from and flashes a set of really bizarre fangs that we've never seen before. He tries to fight her off, but he's been too drugged to actually successfully do that, and she pretty easily takes him down. And then we cut to the title card. After the title card, we cut to a black screen with the prompt Week 1 on it, and we cut to a montage of what Sam and Dean have been doing since Bobby's death. They're at the cabin in Whitefish, and Week 1 is just the two of them quietly sitting and just mopey as fuck, because what else are they going to do? Then we get to Week 2. Dean has moved on to drinking whiskey, but he's staring at those five numbers that Bobby wrote on Sam's hand. 4, 5, 4, 8, 9. And he's like scribbled them repeatedly and obsessing about what they could possibly be. Because they have no idea. This is just five random numbers to them. Meanwhile, Sam finds Bobby's address book. Dean has made a list of all the things this number might be. A lock, a voicemail, a password, a bank number, and none of them have panned out. And he's looking slightly sad and desperate. Then we move on to Week 3. There's an article pinned to a map board. Biggerson's recalls contaminated meat. Customers report illness after eating turducken slammer. Illness, yeah. That's one thing to call it. But they are basically assembling a Dick Roman hunting board. And Bobby's five numbers appear in many different places around this board. Like, they're trying to make sense of it. Like, is it a P.O. box? Is it a zip code? What is it? So while Dean is obsessing about all of this, Sam is trying to be normal in the background. He went out for groceries. And he opens an El Sol beer. The beer of not being in touch with reality. When Sam gets his drink open, he asks Dean kind of cautiously, like he's expecting Dean to protest against this, should we be telling people, like, about Bobby's death? And Dean doesn't even address that question. He just turns around and says, how long ago did I give Frank those numbers? We haven't heard back from him. Dean wants to know if Frank is just insane or if he's being rude to them on purpose. Sam's like, probably a little bit of both. But Dean, I asked you a question. Dean still doesn't address Sam's question. Dean says, well, what if he can't get to a phone because Leviathan killed him? And Dean wants to go check on him. He tries to call him. But he still hasn't addressed Sam's question. Sam cuts Dean off and tells him, do you want to call Bobby's people or not? And Dean's like, well, why is that our job? And Sam's like, very rationally, because nobody else knows he's dead to even, like, phone it around. Dean's like, I'm not calling anybody. If you want to, go right ahead. And Sam's like, are you kidding me? I don't want to call anybody. But apparently he wanted Dean to call everybody. I mean, just call one person and tell him to telephone tree it. And right then, one of Bobby's phones that they still have active rings. They both kind of stare at it, and Dean's like, well, I'm not getting it. And Sam finally relents and does. The person at the other end of the line asks if Bobby's singer is there. Sounds like a girl. And Sam hesitates for a minute, but Dean notices that one of Bobby's flasks is in the bag that Sam pulled that phone out. Dean looks at it and's like, hey, that's nice. I'll honor Bobby. I'll use his flask. Sam tells the girl that Bobby's not there, but I'm a friend of his. And she just says, my dad said to only talk to Bobby Singer, and then hangs up. Dean's like, who was that? Sam's like, some kid. She sounded pretty scared. Dean puts his own beer down on the table and is obsessing over his own notes again. And Sam is worried about this kid. Sam's like, well, I've got her caller ID, so maybe we can find her and go check on her. And Dean is upset at this. He's like, what about Frank? We were going to go check on him, too. Dean argues that Frank's been working on the numbers that Bobby literally died to give them. And Dean suggests Sam go find the Girl Scout, and he'll go check on Frank. Sam says, okay, on one condition. If Frank is just ignoring us because he hasn't come up with an answer either yet, you bail on him and you come help me. Dean reaches down to pick up the beer he had literally just put down full, and now it's empty. And he looks at Sam and he's like, thanks for drinking my entire beer. And as he does that, we hear the little noise that lets us know that there's some sort of spooky activity we're supposed to notice going on here. Because we all know that it was Bobby that drank the beer. As soon as Dean touched that flask, man, Bobby was like, oh yeah, I'm in this room. But Sam says, I didn't touch your beer. My full beer is over there. Sam tries to convince Dean that he probably drank it all without noticing. And like, they deliberately showed us a cut shot of him putting the full bottle down a moment before. And it was the first time he'd picked it up again since then. So that beer did disappear. Dean is not crazy. The suggestion that he could have just drunk a whole beer while he was talking to Sam and not noticed is insane. So, of course, Dean is beginning to feel suspicious that it could be Bobby's ghost. But without any other signs of Bobby, it's not like it's something that can actually help him. Sam has gone and found this girl. He knocks on her door, tells her, we spoke on the phone earlier. And she actually opens the door for him. He introduces himself, tells her that she sounded like she needed help, and he was in the area. She is immediately suspicious. How'd you find me? Her dad is in Bobby's address book. The girl asks where Bobby is then, and Sam has to choke out the words that he's passed away. She eventually does relent and lets Sam in. But she doesn't let on that she knows anything about hunting at all. But she warns Sam that she has 911 on speed dial. And he's like, oh yeah, I understand. So anything he does out of line that freaks her out, she's going to call 911 on him. She asks if Sam is a salesman too. I guess that's the line they give about her dad. Her dad has not called her in 5 days, and he usually calls every night. So she's concerned about him. Chrissy's living there alone, and Sam says, I know how that is, and I will help you track down your dad. Sometimes crap happens out on the road. Sam is desperately trying not to say anything hunting related, but using all the code language that hunters use to find out where her dad had gone. She leads Sam to his room. And he asks her to make him some coffee. And she like smirks at him like, yeah, I know, you just want me out of here. You think you're protecting me. Okay, I'll let you think that. Sam rummages the room and doesn't find much until he finds the back of the closet behind all of his clothes, where he's got a big old pin board up with lots of missing truckers. And Sam comes back out and tells Chrissy that he thinks he has some leads and knows where to start looking. And asks if he can take a framed picture of Chrissy and her dad. And her dad in the picture is the man, of course, we saw in the cold open. The hunter that got attacked by the monster. Sam hands her a card with a number on it and says, if you don't hear from me in the next couple of days, call this number, Dean. But Sam promises to check in with her. She reminds Sam that that's what her dad said when he left and he failed to do that. I don't think she thinks very highly of Sam or his ability to do any better than her own dad did, and maybe she's just sending him off to his death. Meanwhile, Dean shows up at Frank's place. He lets himself in when he doesn't get an answer, and Frank's place has been gutted. All the computer systems that were there the last time are ripped back down to wires and studs. Dean's like, oh boy, this can't be good. And then a gun cocks behind him. It's Frank. Dean tells him, okay, Frank, we're among friends here. And then changes it to, okay, acquaintances, when Frank doesn't buy that. But Frank's just like, that's just what a Leviathan would say. Dean's like, no, I am not. And Frank just taunts him like, oh, sure, just like Dick Roman's not a Leviathan. And Gwyneth Paltrow's not a Leviathan. Well, we know Dick Roman is. Gwyneth Paltrow. Maybe that explains Goop. I don't know. Dean finally figures out, oh, you know that they bleed black goo, right? He carefully reaches inside his jacket for a knife and cuts himself to prove that he bleeds red human blood. Before he reaches for his knife, though, Frank aims down at Dean's feet like he's going to shoot him in the foot just to prove he bleeds blood. And it's like, whoa, 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 no, no, no. Please do not take me out, idiot. Frank is relieved and satisfied that Dean is human, or as Dean says, red-blooded American. And then Dean holds the knife out to Frank and is like, your turn. Frank's like, whoa, no, 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 no. Dean's like, it's only fair, man. You made me do it. Frank, of course, bleeds red. And Dean's like, yeah, I'm glad we could share that together. They're blood brothers now, I guess. Or something like that. I don't know. But Frank then tells him to grab his gun and don't make any noise and come with him. Frank leads them to a barn where he's got an RV parked, all decked out with all of his computer equipment. Dean asks him why he downsized to an RV, and Frank's like, you. When you asked me to look into Dick Roman, I was burned everywhere online. Dean's like, wait, so they're watching you? And Frank's like, I have no idea. Do you think it's easy to see this deep into what's real? Meaning all the Leviathans and monsters out there. While also being bipolar with delusional ideation. So Dean asks for an update on what the big mouths are actually doing. And Frank's like, yeah, I've looked everywhere. Bankers, military. And Dean realizes this is why Frank hasn't called him back. Frank's like, cut me some slack. You only called me 4 days ago. And Dean's like, I called you 4 weeks ago. Frank dismisses it as being a reasonable amount of time and stop busting my balls over or this kind of thing. Dean's like, Frank, I paid you 15 grand for this. Like, he demands some sort of results for $15,000. Dean tells Frank that Dick Roman is every card in his hit deck. And for anyone who doesn't remember back during the Gulf War, they had playing card decks with the names and identities of targets of the military. But he also reminds him that Bobby died to get them those numbers. And then Frank walks over to him. It's like, I'm truly sorry that Bobby died. Really, I am. And then he starts remembering something that he and Bobby did in Fresno sometime in the past. Like reminiscing fondly about Bobby. And Dean's like, no, 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 no. You know, you don't get out of this. You give me this information now, chum. Frank tells Dean that he's just trying to make some friendly conversation. And Dean is mad. He's like, this is not a friendship. I am paying you. Frank's like, you know what you need? A little LSD, a little shiatsu. That just breaks Dean. He's like, I'm out of here. I'm not sticking around for your crazy. Although Dean really probably could at least use the massage. My God, he's got some unresolved tension. But Frank stops him. It's like, you really want to know what those numbers are? But Frank is only building up. Dean's like, I know that. If I didn't know that, I wouldn't be paying you 15 grand to tell me what they actually are. So Frank lets him know that that doesn't leave them much else to do other than probability generate. What if there were more than five numbers, or supposed to be more than five numbers? But at least that sets Dean back on his heels. He has no idea what Frank's talking about. So Frank's gonna teach him a little lesson. And I think it's great that over the next few days, Dean learns a lot of tech stuff from Frank that even makes Sam go, you're going to have to show me how to do that. Dean picked up on all that real fast, and it gives him a basis going forward into the future. Whatever Frank taught him here, genuinely Dean understood and gave him a foundation for hacking into traffic cams and stuff for the rest of the series. So, good on him for that. Frank, in his endearingly frank way, tells Dean how he came up with the idea that, you know, if you get a 5-digit sequence of numbers and they don't seem to relate to the Leviathan at all, you start to wonder if maybe there was another number. Like, are we missing a number? And Dean's like, how do you figure that? And it's like, he'd already commented about Bobby being an old drunk. But then he said, well, because he was also dying of brain trauma, you know, he could have missed something in that. Frank apparently never even had to go past 6 digits, because that came up with coordinates. Dean asks if he's sure, and Frank's like, oh yeah, because it's the coordinates to a parcel of land that's owned by a subsidiary of a subsidiary of Richard Roman Enterprises. Right now, it's just a field in Wisconsin. And Dean is impressed with this and is like, okay, so what do we do? And Frank says, we stay away from there, or if we're stupid, we go there and set up surveillance. Like you and me, teaming up on a hunt, setting up surveillance, a plot of grass owned by Leviathans. That sounds smart, but it is something to do, furthering the usefulness of Bobby's dying information that he gave them. For the first time since Bobby died, Dean feels like he's actually making progress here. Meanwhile, Sam's off investigating the missing hunter's case. He's at the coroner's office. The man on the table looks suspiciously like the man who'd walked off with the escort in the cold open. The cause of death? He's missing 5 pints of blood. Sam asks if it was some kind of animal attack, and the coroner jokes that, or a vampire. Sam just looks at him like, okay, no, this was definitely not a vampire. And the coroner replies that that usually at least gets a chuckle. But the bites don't look like vampire bites. As he leaves the coroner's office, Sam is on the phone with Dean asking if he found Frank, and yeah, Dean shares the information about the coordinates and that he and Frank are heading to the land now. Sam's like, wait a second, you're just going to drive right up to a Leviathan place? And Dean's like, relax, it's just an empty field. And then Dean just casually tells Sam, relax, Dick Roman's not even there. He's at a TED conference. It's all over the Huffington Post. And Sam's like, laughs at him. And it's like, since when do you read? It's like, dude, we see Dean read all the damn time. Dean just replies, know your enemy, Sam. Like, this isn't even a joking matter. He's not even going to try and brush it off. Dean then asks Sam what's going on with the girl. And Sam says, I don't even think she knows her dad's in the life. All he's got is 3 missing truckers and 1 bloodless body. And it's like, oh, Sam, really? You didn't think that she knew her dad was in the life? How do you think he, living alone with her, kept that from her? I mean, your dad only managed to keep it from you until you were what, like 8 or 9 years old? And even then you were suspicious. Do you really think he successfully kept it from his daughter until she was a teenager? Sam. As Dean hangs up with Sam, and they've agreed to like keep each other posted on what's going on, Frank comes out of his RV and is like, equipment's ready. Come on and get your costume on so we can get out of here. Dean's like, costume? And it's like, Dean, why are you complaining about the costume? You all wear all sorts of weird outfits to sneak around. You've been doing it since season 1, going in as exterminators or whatever. They're dressed up as phone company employees, and they've even got the cherry picker truck all decked out. Frank tells Dean that he's going up in the cherry picker to pretend like he's fixing something up there. Dean's like, what are you talking about? I don't know how to drive that thing. And Frank's like, and you think I do? And Frank points at Dean's costume, where the patch over his pocket reads technician, and Frank's reads manager. So Dean unhappily climbs up into the bucket, clips in his little safety line, and does a really poor job of navigating the cherry picker bucket up to the top of the telephone pole, jerking back and forth and up and down. And while Dean's trying to figure that out, Frank's got some really high-tech binoculars, and he's looking around the field, and he spots other surveillance cameras already up there. And just as soon as Dean gets up to where he's supposed to be, Frank's like, ah, crap, and yells for him to come back down. Frank explains that the whole place is under surveillance, and Dean's like, yeah, it's going to be hard to set up surveillance if their place is already under surveillance. Frank's like, don't worry. They're just going to see a couple of phone technicians. And if there's already security cameras, all we have to do is tap into them. Back at Frank's trailer, he pulls up the camera feed, and Dean's like, okay, what do we do now? Frank tells him he looks horrific. When was the last time you slept? All we're going to do is just watch these screens. I'll take first shift. He starts saying something else and then glances over at Dean, who has already fallen asleep sitting up in the chair. He was right. Dean really did need a nap. And unfortunately, just as Dean falls asleep, Sam calls and gets his voicemail because Dean doesn't even hear his phone buzzing in his pocket. Sam informs Dean that he thinks the guy was hunting a Vitala and that their dad hunted one back in the day. So Sam's got his notes and feels confident going after the thing himself. Sam tells him that a silver knife to the heart is all it takes and that they're maladjusted loner types who knock a guy out and drag them back to their lair to feed slow on him. So there's a chance that the girl's dad could still be alive, and it would be really nice to be able to bring him home to her. So when Sam needs Dean's help, Dean is unreachable. Sam doesn't let that stop him. He goes back to the truck stop, and we see the same waitress who attacked Lee. And if I slip and call him Lee, I don't know if we've gotten his name yet or not, but his name's Lee. Sam shows her the picture of the missing hunter folded in half so Chrissy isn't displayed in the photo and asks if she's ever seen this man. And she says, sure, I think he was in here a few nights ago and he went out and followed her. And she points out the window to the suggestively dressed woman outside who we saw the man follow in the cold open. So that's our first clue that the waitress is not the only monster working that scene. Sam goes out to talk to the woman, sees her name tag necklace says Sally. He asks her if she's ever seen that man. She tells him no, and Sam asks if she's sure, and she looks down, she looks skittish, and tells him that it's not safe here. Let's go someplace private, and leads him back down that same aisle between two parked trucks, only they're different trucks this time, under the truck stop sign. Now, instead of the moving experts truck, there's one that says heavy duty chill transport or something with like a polar bear painted on it. She plays scared, tells him that people are disappearing around there and she's afraid she'll be next. And yet she just lured this much larger man into a dark and secluded corridor where there nobody knows they're there, and she's afraid because people are going missing and she'll be next. Like, this strange man wouldn't be a threat in that exact way. Like, wouldn't you want to stay out in the light? Nope. But Sam, being a kind and understanding human being, doesn't see that and just sees a scared woman. Sam asks her what she saw. The woman's afraid and says, I don't know what I saw. And Sam hears rapid footsteps coming up behind him, so he pulls a knife, prepared to attack whoever it is. It's the waitress again. She grabs Sam by the throat, knocks the knife out of his hand, and Sam calls out for Sally to run away. But no, she's standing right up there too, with her weird eyes and fangs bared, and Sam realizes how screwed he is. She kicks his knee out and he falls to the ground, and she bites down on Sam's neck, envenomating him, and he just goes out cold, like instantly. So I guess Vitalas aren't loners like their dad had thought years and years ago. Meanwhile, back at Frank's, Dean finally wakes up. It's daylight, though, and Frank is still sitting there watching all of his monitors with the surveillance footage of that field. Dean asks how long he was out. Frank tells him about 36 hours. Dean's like, what? Why didn't you wake me up? Frank's like, I'm not your butler. Like, dude, you wanted him to take a shift watching the monitors or something? Like, anything? But if Dean has slept 36 hours, Dean, Mr. I at least need my 4 hours, needs 36 hours of sleep, that gives you some sort of hint of how sleep deprived he was and how unsafe he felt about falling asleep all this time. And for some reason, he felt safe enough to sleep there with Frank. And I appreciate that about Frank. But Dean has woken up just in time to see something, the first activity Frank has noticed on these monitors. There's somebody out walking in the field. It's a woman, looking all very businesslike, with her hair slicked back and everything. She, if you didn't know better, you'd think, maybe she's an angel, the way she's dressed, because she's wearing a trench coat that's like the woman version of Cass's coat, taking notes on a big old clipboard. But Frank has identified her as someone who works for Richard Roman. Dean asks what she's doing there, and Frank says they're surveying, getting ready to build something. They don't know what, though. So Dean's like, okay, well, how do we find out what they're going to build there? And Frank says, we watch. Patience, Grasshopper. Dean's like, yeah, me and Patience aren't on good terms. So Frank suggests that Dean go out and kill something or whatever you kids do to pass the time. And yeah, honestly, that's kind of what Dean needs. He needs to get up and get moving around. Do something productive. Dean just stares at him and Frank's like, what, you didn't like my suggestion? And Dean taunts him back. He's like, you know, you're not in a position to be giving suggestions, Mr. One Step Away from a Rubber Room. Frank's like, yeah, have I mentioned you look awful too? Dean's like, yeah, I know I look awful. Somebody I care about just got shot in the head. And this whole trying to figure out what all this is about is like pushing a rock up a hill. So screw you. And Frank's like, okay, well, here's my advice you didn't ask for. And Dean's like, what? You're still talking? Quit. Dean's like, what on earth are you talking about? Quit. I've got to get Dick Roman. And Frank's like, yeah, and kill yourself in the process trying. But Dean mulls it over for a moment and tells Frank that he's not going to quit. It's not even an option. He couldn't abandon his brother like that. And Frank's like, okay, then do what I did. Dean gets snarky and like, what, live like this? Stock up on sea rations and go conspiracy theory crazy? And then Frank is like, no, what I did when I was 26 and came home to find my wife and two kids gutted on the floor. Frank's origin story in all of this craziness has some depth that Dean never knew. Frank has had horrors in his life. Frank decided to be fine until the end of the week. He made himself smile because you're alive and that's your job. And then you do it again the next week. Dean's like, what, so fake it? Frank's like, I call it being professional. And there is not a hint of the joking banter that the two of them have engaged in at all. This is deadly serious for both of them. And it's dismal as fuck. And it's very much like the advice Bobby gave Dean two episodes ago. You're starting to talk like one of the dead hunters, you know? So I guess this is kind of a step up at least. Fake it till you make it. Put on that smile and pretend like everything's okay and make it through one more week. And that's kind of season 7, how we all feel during season 7. We're just trying to survive one more week and then hopefully we'll be 1 week closer to the end of this, right? Right. Frank tells Dean to do it right, do it with a smile, or don't do it. Like, these are your options. That gives Dean something to think about. He turns around, pulls out his cell phone, checks his messages, and realizes Sam had tried to call. And we hear the voicemail that Sam left for Dean earlier. Only they cut the wrong snippet of Sam talking in. And it makes no sense when Dean's like, oh, no, no, no. Unless he already knew that John's journal did not contain the full information about Vitalis that Dean himself learned. So when Dean says to the phone, no, 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 Sam, that's not right. After that, we hear Sam say the bit about them being maladjusted loner types. That's the part that it was not right. So they cut the wrong sound clip in there somehow. But Dean hangs up on the message and immediately tries to call Sam back. And of course, he doesn't get an answer because we know that Sam has already been captured by the pair of Vitalas. While he's listening to Sam's message, he gets another incoming call and hangs up to answer that. He assumes it's Sam, but no, because we already saw Sam get attacked and kidnapped by that pair of Vitalas. It's Chrissy. calling the emergency number that Sam had left for her because she hasn't heard from him in a few days. I mean, most hunters have some sort of origin story about dad being on a hunting trip and hasn't been home in a few days. Well, now she's got double down on that with Sam missing. And that's when she tells Dean that Sam told her to call this number if she didn't hear back from him. And Dean realizes that Sam is in big trouble. Meanwhile, Sam is waking up in some sort of a warehouse tied to a chair. There's the body of a drained man lying against the wall behind him. There's another guy dead in another chair. And Chrissy's dad, miraculously still alive, tied in the next chair over. But he's looking rough. Lee tries to be helpful as Sam wakes up, tells him that the ringing in his ears is from their venom. Sam's like, venom? That wasn't in John's notes. Then Lee's like, you seem to be handling this pretty well. And Sam's like, well, I was out there looking for you. Letting Lee know that he is also a hunter. He knows the deal. He introduces himself as a friend of Bobby Singer's and that Chrissy called and she's fine. At least he's able to reassure Lee that his daughter is fine. Sam asks how they're going to get out of there. Lee has no idea. They usually come back pretty quick. But Lee describes their whole system as they tag team each other. One of them knocks you out and the other one drags you to this place a few miles down the road. They can feed on you 3 or 4 times and then you're dead. And their venom makes it so that you can't walk, you can't really see, you can't really do anything. And then Sam asks how many times they've fed on him. And he tells Sam, 3. Well, they've only fed on Sam once. Meanwhile, Dean is arriving at Chrissy's. He asks what she told Sam, because Sam didn't tell him where he was going. Just sort of like in general, no specific location updates. She just showed him to her dad's room. Dean pauses in the room before looking for anything. Turns to Chrissy and says, look, I really don't have time to hold your hand here. Like we saw Sam do, giving her the excuse of going, could you make me a cup of coffee, please? And getting her out of the room gently without letting her know anything fishy is going on. Dean just tells her flat out that maybe she should go wait in the living room because maybe her dad doesn't want her to know every single thing about him. But Chrissy just puts a hand on her hip and leans against the doorframe like, no, we've played this game enough. Dean doesn't even bother rummaging the desk. He just goes right to the closet, parts the clothes, and finds a wall that used to have a map and a bunch of other information on it. All that's left is the corners of the map. Dean turns around with the scrap of map and asks Chrissy, where is the rest of it? And Chrissy's like, oh, you mean all the information about the job my dad was working? And Dean realizes very quickly that, oh my God, Sam was so wrong. She knows everything about hunting. He questions her. Sam said, you didn't know. And Chrissy's response is, Sam seemed competent. Like he knew what he was doing. And she was content to let him believe that she didn't know anything. She trusted him to go out and save her dad, but then he didn't come back. And Dean is just frustrated. He's like, I have had a long, 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 long week. Instead of complying, Chrissy just pulls a gun on him. Dean's like, okay, I get it. You're tough, but I'm trying to get Sam and your dad back. And Chrissy's like, my dad left. And he didn't come back. And then Sam left, and he didn't come back. There's no way in hell I'm letting you leave and leave me here alone. There's nobody else for me to call. I am coming with you. When Dean protests this, she's like, I'm coming, or you're not going. Like, I will not give you that information. Or maybe she'll shoot him. So Dean reaches out real quick and grabs the gun out of her hand and demands that she hand the map over. At least he didn't point the gun at her. She's just a kid. He doesn't want her tagging along. Even though Dean did his first solo hunt when he wasn't much older than her and he'd been hunting with John since he was what, like 6, 8, something like that? But Chrissy says she can't hand the map over because she burned it. But she memorized it first. So if Dean wants to know where to go, he's got to take her with him. Later on in the car, Chrissy's in the passenger seat and says she wants to ask Dean a question. Dean's like, okay, look, here's the deal. I'm a really fun guy. I'm awesome, actually. But I am not in the mood. Dean tells her he's in the middle of some serious crap, and if this was not an emergency, he would drop her ass off at the nearest mall. But I mean, Sam's life is on the line here, too. She's like, okay, what crap? And Dean actually gives her an answer. Revenge crap. Okay, now shut up. So that's what this mission is. Revenge against Dick Roman for murdering Bobby. It's not even about the Leviathans and everything that they have done to him over the year that they've been here, like killing Cass to start with and all of that. Now it's personal that he wants Dick Roman's head on a platter, even if he never gets another single Leviathan, even if Leviathans take over the earth, he wants Dick dead. It looks like she's going to comply, put some headphones in, and like 2 seconds later, yanks them back out. And is like, my dad's a great hunter, and your brother's the size of a car, so how come both of them got taken by this thing? And this is something that is actually relevant for Dean to talk about. Good move, Chrissy, if you wanted any sort of like human companionship on this drive. This was the correct line of questioning. Dean relents and tells her that Vitalas usually hunt in pairs. And Sam and your dad both assumed it was one thing hunting. Chrissy asks why they thought that. Dean's like, because they had the wrong info, the best available info, but it was wrong. Because their dad took down a loner years ago and Sam was working off his journal. So Chrissy asks, well, how come Dean knows they hunt in pairs? Because Dean hunted one that turned out to be two a couple years back. And Chrissy's like, oh, well, great. Thanks for sharing that information with the class. You didn't even tell your brother? And then Dean retorts that Sam was at Stanford at the time. He was out of hunting. It just never occurred to him. They've never encountered another Vitala since. And Chrissy is like, what? Sam went to college? I thought you said your dad was a hunter. And Dean says, yeah, he was. But Sam left and went to college. And he turns it on Chrissy. You know, you could do that too. You could go to college, be a hunter slash pediatrician. And Chrissy looks like she's actually entertaining the idea, or at least thinking about it. Meanwhile, back in the Vitala's warehouse, and one of them comes in and is like, ooh, hunter buffet, all you can eat. Sally goes over to take a bite out of Lee, and we know that it's probably going to kill him if she does. So Sam tells her, did I tell you about the Vitala's I took down in Utah? And she stops and looks up at Sam. And he just goes on once he's got her attention. You remind me of them, except they were so much younger. And then he gives a sort of creepy speech to her about how he tied them up, not because he had to, but so I could take my time. Like, he tortured them. Of course, we know Sam wasn't even the one to kill those two Vitalas. And we know that Sam would never tie something up just to torture it before killing it. The Vitala tells Sam, you're lying. And he smiles and tells her, no, I just wanted you to know how much I enjoyed cutting up your sisters. And then she tells him to shut up, moves in real quick, and bites Sam. But at least now, Lee has a chance to survive. We cut back to Dean and Chrissy, now parked outside that truck stop, doing some sort of surveillance. They've gotten some fast food. Dean asks Chrissy if she's ever even worked with her father, and she says, sure, of course. And it's kind of clear that she's exaggerating how much work she's actually done with her dad. And Dean's like, yeah, no, actual work, not just shooting cans in the woods. And Chrissy argues back that she helps all the time, like with research and stuff, sort of like what Sam was relegated to as a kid. When Dean and John were out on hunts and we saw Sam doing research in a library, Dean's assessment is that no, she hasn't really helped on a hunt, and Dean's like, okay, well, right about now, your stomach's probably pretty knotted up. And Chrissy's like, not really. Maybe this was harder for you when you were my age. And it's like, oh, sweetie, no, no. Dean tells her she's not a great actress because the fear is like all over her face. And she tells him that no, she's ready. She's been prepping for this her entire life. But she gives just as good as Dean is. Dean's trying to tell her, this is nothing like training. This is the real thing here. And she just sasses him right back, even though it's obvious that she's scared, because any reasonable human being would be. What we see going on in that parking lot is Sally taking another man around behind a trailer truck, and the waitress walking real fast toward the other end of the truck. But it's Chrissy who points out the waitress climbing in the front of the truck and driving it off. Why would a waitress be doing that? So they follow the waitress back to the warehouse where they're unloading their latest victim. And Dean offers Chrissy a fist bump. And she just mocks him for that. Like, what century is it even? Nobody fist bumps anymore. But Dean insists. He shakes his fist at her until she fist bumps him back. And when she's just about to finally, like, relent and fist bump him or push his fist away, he grabs her wrist and handcuffs her to the steering wheel. Dean's like, I'm not bringing a kid in there. She's like, why? I can do everything you can do. And Dean just assures her that he will bring her dad back. He promises. And just as Dean is getting out of the car, she says, please, they're probably dead. And that is what had been driving Dean's fear this entire time. Why he'd been loitering and not bolting into the building. Ever since he got that call from Chrissy, he's been terrified that Sam is already dead and it's too late and he's just going there to find his body. Dean actually says to her, you don't know that. You don't know that they're dead. Chrissy's like, it's been days. People die, Dean. I've seen it. I watched my mom get torn to shreds. And Dean's like, oh yeah, I watched mine burn on the ceiling. Hey, fist bump? She just wants to go into that warehouse and kill the monsters that almost took her dad from her, or that she believes already did take her dad from her. She has convinced herself that there's no way her father can still be alive, because that's the only way she can get through this, is by pulling a Sam and staying with reality until proven otherwise. Chrissy's like, you're such a hypocrite. Why do you get to go in and I don't? And Dean's like, because I'm the grown-up. Now give it to me. She's like, playing innocent. What? Your lockpick. He knows she's got a lockpick. But she does hand it over. And Dean goes in and picks the lock with her lockpick. Both Vitalas are in there, trussing up their new victim. There's still dead bodies all around the room. One of them says, good thing we picked up a new one because this one's almost tapped out. I guess meaning Lee. One Vitala says to the other, so do you want to finish him together? Yeah, sure. And Dean reacts immediately, picks up a piece of metal and just swings it and clubs Sally with it. That's obviously not the correct weapon to kill a Vitala. You need a silver knife to the heart. But at least he's got to kill two of them. He's only got one knife and can't do both of them at the same time. Incapacitate one real bad while you work on the other. Dean goes after her with the knife, but she again overpowers him. His knife falls to the floor. She grabs him by the throat and Sam starts coming back to consciousness. Dean's able to reach a crowbar and he uses it to clobber her. Dean manages to pick up the knife and then hesitates for a moment because Chrissy runs in saying, Dad, I got you. Hang on. And as she runs past the first Vitala Dean knocked out, she reaches up and grabs Chrissy's leg. So Sally now has Chrissy, Dean standing over the waitress with the silver knife. And Sally's like, let her go or I'm going to kill this girl. So Dean lets her go. Now he's just got one more problem, saving Chrissy on top of everything else. it's Lee who protests this. He's like, what were you thinking bringing her here? Like, Dean starts walking over to them. And Sally's like, okay, now drop the knife. And Dean stops and puts the knife on the ground, saying that she's just a child, let her go. But they're all reassured now that Lee is still alive. Sam is most definitely still alive. That's a huge relief off Dean's shoulders because he'd been worrying since he stormed out of Frank's that he was already too late. And the Vitalas are adamant that nobody is going to be let go, including Chrissy. She calls out to her dad and he tells her everything's going to be okay. The waitress, though, is done with their family bonding time and tells Lee to shut up as she bites his neck. And Dean watches, kind of in horror. Chrissy's like, Daddy, no. Chrissy calls out for Dean to help her. And Sally's like, no one can help you now. And Chrissy's like, yeah, I guess I don't need help. She twists around in Sally's grasp, pulls out a silver knife, and stabs Sally in the heart. And Sally just shrivels up and falls to the ground. But Dean is startled back into action. As Chrissy cuts Sam free, Dean picks up the other silver knife. But it's Sam who gets there first, with Chrissy's knife stabbing the waitress. So this whole time, Dean was kind of useless in this hunt. And it kind of makes you wonder, why did he freeze that way? Was he just worried what they were going to do to Chrissy? Was he terrified what would happen to Sam if he failed? Was he afraid he was going to end up in this same place? Dean mentioned he was on a hunt for one that turned out to be two. How did he figure that out? Does he know what that venom feels like? I'm thinking he probably does. I'm wondering if it was even a hunt he took on alone, you know? Did he have a partner in that hunt? Did his partner save his life? But the look in Dean's eyes as that Vitala bit Lee always made me think Dean knows what that feels like. Dean just gets to brush all that baggage off because Chrissy's just celebrating, untying her dad. And she's like, yeah, bad actress, huh? No, she kicked ass. She was prepared for this. She was 100% right. The next day at the hospital, Chrissy's sitting out in the hall outside her dad's room. Sam and Dean go in to visit her dad. He's glad to see them. He wanted to thank them. Dean replies, don't thank us. Quit. You've got a chance to get out here. Go live a normal life. Let her choose what she wants to do with her life. You don't have to do this. Lee tells Dean that, no, you know, they're in this for a reason. And Dean's like, yeah, I know, your family. But that's the same reason you should get out now. Lee just looks at him like, I can't. Do you know anyone who ever left the life? And Dean's like, nope, they all get killed first. Implying that you have a chance to be a groundbreaker here, Lee. Sam and Dean leave the hospital, but Chrissy follows them out and calls Dean back. She's like, thanks for saying bye, asshat. And he's like, what, now you're sentimental? She just wanted to tell him that he's kind of amusing for an old man. And like, he's what, 33 or so here? Something like that. Old. That's just hilarious. But I guess when you're 14, 33 is ancient. Dean asks her how she got out of the cuffs. She's not going to answer him. And he's like, ah, bobby pin. And it's like, anytime you hear the word bobby in this show, you think of one bobby. But ghost tricks can get you out of that too, huh? Dean tells her, yeah, you may have saved our lives, but the point stands, you could have gotten yourself killed. Chrissy replies that, yeah, they're retiring. She's one and done. One hunt and she's done. He asks her how she feels about that. And she doesn't really know yet, but maybe she'll go to Stanford like Sam. And then she holds a fist out for Dean to bump. And he does. She tells him that he's so lame and he replies, yeah, we are. Then we cut to Sam and Dean driving later that night. Sam takes a deep breath and is like, you know what? Good for them. This was after the cutscene conversation where he asks if Dean thinks they really can get out of the life. And Dean is actually feeling pretty decent about this. He's like, it's nice to walk away from something and know that those people are going to be okay. Dean asks Sam how he's doing, and Sam admits that he's not all right. Who mean, on top of the hallucifering, what did Vitala Venom do to him? But he knows he's not okay, and his only response to that is to maybe do some more work. Keep hunting, because what else are we going to do? Sam's like, should I even ask how you are? Dean replies that he's fine, and we know he's really super duper not fine. Dean agrees that Sam's right. We should just work, right? Because, I mean, that was the advice Frank gave him. Either quit or do the job with a smile. Be a professional about it. But it's finally Sam's turn to get some restful sleep. He turns on the radio and then sort of does his best to roll over in the front seat of the car. And the song that comes on is Dear Mr. Fantasy by Traffic. And as Dean listens to it, he smiles. And it is the most pained, fake-looking, forced smile. It's one of the most heart-wrenching smiles I've ever seen on television. He just looks like he's going to start sobbing at any moment. And just the way the light hits his face and his expression changes. And he realizes that he gets like one brief second of a smile and he just can't. He just can't. And he just forcing himself to. And this whole sequence is just agony as this song plays. And if you don't know the lyrics, it's do anything to take us out of this gloom. And you are the one who can make us all laugh. But doing that, you break out in tears. And that's exactly it. Please don't be sad if it was a straight mind you had. We wouldn't have known you all these years. Like, he is absolutely fucked. And he knows it. And yet he's still pasting on that smile and deciding to survive until the end of the week because he's a professional. And that's what he does. He's not going to quit. Because he's on his revenge mission to take down Dick Roman. And that's where the episode ends. With Dean having received the second horrifically painful piece of advice in the last three episodes. First from Bobby about pulling himself together and start talking like one of the living hunters again instead of one of the dead ones. And now this. Frank's advice to him. Yes, we still have a lot of season 7 to muddle through, and it's just agony. And this didn't really progress much other than letting us know that the Leviathans have a plot of land. Frank got them moving out of their stagnation that they'd been in, mourning Bobby for a month. Dean finally got a decent 36 hours of sleep, and he still doesn't look great when he wakes up. I mean, seriously, nobody deserves a vacation more than Sam and Dean Winchester. And by the end of 8 more seasons after this, they really, really deserved a vacation. Anyway, I could be grumpy about it, but I've already gone way longer than I was supposed to this week. But at least I got this episode recorded. So I'm taking that as a win. So this is the second time in 3 episodes that Dean's gotten some really painful advice. First was Bobby, and now Frank. And then next week, there will be another painful bit of advice of the pull up your bootstraps variety in season 7, episode 12, Time After Time. And thank goodness I will be back to my regular recording schedule next week after like 3 weeks of interrupted recording schedules where I've squeezed this in wherever I could so I wouldn't fall behind a week. I will actually be home and things will be settled and normal for the foreseeable future after this weekend. So anyway, until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord and Blue Sky as MittensMorgul. Or you can email me at mittensmorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And yeah, I'm leaving for vacation Thursday. I mean, I'll already be long back by the time I post this episode. I don't post these for like 2 weeks after I record them. So I'll be long back. But yeah, I'm going to the same place I was when Rock Never Dies aired for the first time. And they were sitting in that snazzy hotel lobby drinking water from the cucumber water dispenser. And there was a cucumber water dispenser at the hotel I was staying at too. So I was like, oh my God. And so of course this is now like fused to my brain, the association of that episode with this place where I'm going. So yeah, back when in the days when I used to live blog episodes, I took the night off from like hanging out with all my friends on the beach, instead watched this episode, watched that episode of Supernatural. Good times, man. Good times. They understood. Anyway, that's why they're still my friends and I'm still going to the beach again with them like 5 years after that, 6 years, whatever. Long time. Anyway, I've been friends with them since some people who are listening to this before they were born. Like, so, you know, if you're under like 35, you're younger than my friendships with these people. So anyway, we're going to have fun. I hope everybody else is having just as much fun. And I will be sticking my toes in the sand for Dean Winchester, like deliberately, like this one's for Dean, and just jamming my toes in the sand as hard as I can. Because, God, they really do need a vacation. Oh, yeah. Anyway, have a good one, everyone.